everybody.
Hey.
Welcome to Pretty Scary.
Pretty Scary Boo.
Pretty Scary Boo. This is just a usual episode, like all our other episodes. Nothing weird about it at all.
I've been quiet the whole time.
We don't have 25 solid minutes of outtakes.
Nope.
Featuring me and Carrie trying to figure out Skype. None of those things.
You don't have that.
Nothing.
I'm glad you had the foresight to hit record you worked that one out.
Business as usual.
Yep. As usual.
As usual.
Yep. So what are we talking about today, Adam?
We're talking about NESPA.
What's NESPA?
The New England Society of Psychic Research. I don't know why it says paranormal on the notes.
I have no idea who wrote those notes.
I know that's not correct.
That's weird.
Really weird. We are talking to Tony Spera, who is the current director of NESPA. And NESPA is the Paranormal Research Society started by Ed and Lorraine Warren in 1952.
My Graceland.
Yep.
It's my Graceland.
Is it?
Yeah, I really want to go there.
Oh, yeah. I would love to go to this museum, too.
Which is currently
shut down. Yeah. They're looking for a new spot.
But
doesn't that kind of make sense that a museum about hauntings is currently dead?
Because of zoning restrictions. Oh, this isn't zoned for haunted structures.
That's what Caitlin was saying.
Yeah, it's just like, sorry, this is a business zone, not a paranormal business zone.
It's just a big ghetto of ghosts.
Believe it or not, your museum falls under an arts community project, and this is strictly for profit, and we're going to need you to find another place.
And my guess is that Tony's going to be looking.
Yeah, yeah. Tony is looking.
He's a researcher. It shouldn't take him that long.
Yeah, you'll notice when we get into this interview, there's a couple interesting things about it.
I would assume we haven't done the interview yet.
Yeah, yeah.
How are we playing this? Someone help me out.
Yeah, we're going to just
have
to.
When you talked about being quiet, I was like, but this is the beginning.
No.
You guys always mess it up. I'm very good at lying and staying in character.
I just don't have the energy to do it right now.
No one is going to buy
that I was quiet.
Even with Caitlin in the room, it was just me and you running the interview. That doesn't happen. Like, Caitlin would be running the interview if she was in the room. We know this.
Yeah. Mm. At one point, when we couldn't get a hold of Tony because we called Tony and Tony was on the other line and didn't answer our call, of course. And Adam's like, what do we do? And I go, I don't know. I was like, usually Caitlin drives the wheel. Like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, we were frozen. As if we had seen a haunted doll.
So we just had a scheduling mix up basically. And I wasn't able to make it. And then we thought maybe I was going to make it, but I will say that I walked in for like probably the last quarter of the interview, and Carrie, you did a great job.
You really did a great job.
You really did.
And you had me laughing, so I'm assuming everybody that listens to this interview is going to fucking love this call because it was great. And he was weird. He's supposed to be, I mean, like in a good way, like fun.
He wasn't kooky weird. He was just...
He was like the ghost hunter version of the Totinos of West Virginia.
Like old school though. Yeah. Almost like, and he kind of talked like a mafia guy.
Yeah, he was like, hey, not everyone sees a burglary, but when the police get called, they see it and I gotta where the ghosts are.
I mean, but think about how big your balls have to be like, this is gonna be my job.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, I have a full-time job and I co-host a sort of true crime paranormal podcast on the side. No, my full-time life, all I'm going to do is ghost stuff.
Just ghost stuff.
Like, you believe... I can't believe I didn't get to talk to this guy. I'm so excited to find another reason to talk to him.
Yeah.
Oh, he'll talk to you.
Yeah, we'll definitely be able to have him back on. He's more than willing to talk.
He loves talking.
He does.
It's just always nice to meet a more extreme version of me. Because I really do believe in ghosts, and I don't care.
So do I, yeah.
I don't care.
I mean, like, I felt like that. We barely scratched the surface, and that was like half an hour. I wished he could compartmentalize his answers a little bit more, because there's so much more we could have asked.
And don't get me wrong, it is interesting, but you're going to hear a lot about how Ed and Lorraine Warren met.
He loves analogies, too.
Has there ever been a bigger primer for a phone interview in the history of podcasting or radio than this right now?
And definitely, if you're a subscriber, check out the Outtake Show and listen to the lead up. That happens every time we do an interview. It ends up in the outtakes. There's a good 10 to 15 minutes where we're like, they're not answering. What do we do?
That's what I said. I was like, that's never happened to us. And we've done multiple.
We did do an interview recently for another podcast where the connection was bad. And I couldn't necessarily hear everything the person was saying. And I would just decide what the question was and answer it.
Yeah. I got frustrated and just started playing with the dog.
She really did. Carrie picked up my dog and just started petting my dog. And I was like, he'd be like, but... And then I'd say, like, well, here's the thing about true crime. just go for it. Like, I didn't know what else to do.
This interview, it sounds like he's calling from maybe like a haunted phone in the museum, because there's a lot of white noise in the background.
There's some white noise.
Well, here's the deal.
That guy
has attracted all sorts of spirit shit. Okay, like,
it's a party line at this point.
Since we're about to listen to an interview of a man who fully believes in ghosts, let's just... For the sake of this conversation going forward, ghosts are real. And
they are.
Well, I know, but you know, I'm still dealing with my insecurities on this issue, Adam. But anyway, so he's got to have attracted crazy energy. You don't just like walk around and do this shit with your life. Like go straight. It's like, hey, what do you study? Oh, radioactivity. Like you.
Yeah.
It's gonna. What do you do? I'm a beekeeper. You've been, like, you know, every time they pick up the phone, it's like.
So, well, yeah, there's ghosts buzzing in the background.
It's an extreme analogy, which I do also understand there's a very roundabout analogy in the phone interview.
There are several analogies.
It's an analogy heavy.
And he does
Carrie,
at one point
Carrie,
say,
let me tell you, Carrie,
here's how
on.
I analogize Fuck. This.
So bummed out.
And Adam would just sit there and like type in his questions.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, Carrie, you did a great job. You do.
Thank you.
Get ready to listen to Carrie drive the podcast.
I cannot tell you how many times we just released our clip show, our thank you shout out episode for White Wine True Crime. And we picked a bunch of different clips and a couple of them are interviews that we did. And I cannot tell you how many times Carrie has saved me from a panic attack in an interview by asking something so off the wall and weird where I just feel like... Well, I can't. That it doesn't get weirder than that. So my question about the title of the book is going to be just fine. Like
that does happen.
No,
at one point in this interview.
I know. I'm very excited for everybody to hear it because I was laughing in the other room.
Yeah,
listening.
Well,
to
when
the
I
recording.
Did it on White Wine True Crime, they laughed. When I did it to Tony, he.
Yeah, here's
Tony
the
wasn't here's the Tony
thing.
Wasn't into it.
Here's the thing about people who investigate ghosts. Ironically, not all of them have a great sense of humor.
Carrie, I've never heard of that case. Carrie,
yeah,
Carrie, I've never heard of that case.
No.
What are you, a ghost?
Do you think ghosts do butt stuff?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, you've got nothing to lose if you're a ghost,
yeah.
Right? You got to do butt stuff.
Okay, so when we
that's
call
probably
back,
why
that
you
will
become
be one of my first questions.
A ghost, there's like. When you get to wherever you go, there's probably a hallway that says butt stuff, no butt stuff.
Yeah.
You take the butt stuff hall, you're a ghost.
Yeah, it's a test. Yeah.
Butt stuff hall.
It's a test.
Welcome to Pretty Scary, recorded at Butt Stuff Hall.
You open the door and it looks like the Lost Souls room of Beetlejuice, but it's just buttholes floating in front of
Oh, let's call Tony back and see
just
if
like,
he knows about buttholes.
Just big worn out buttholes, like wind socks, just like floating
flopping
in
the wind.
I mean, I can see it's like a very like porthole heavy thing. Yeah. Yeah. Buttholes sound like, but there's also probably like a,
yeah,
like a whistle. Anyway, what, Carrie?
No, I like that this was my question and then I like got over it.
Carrie's like, guys, I don't even care this much about my butt stuff joke. And Adam and I are like, wait, we got more.
We got more butt stuff.
I got 15 minutes of butt stuff.
So should we get to the interview?
Well, I think we should. And I thought it was very interesting because he does start off talking about the relationship between Ed and Lorraine. And I didn't realize it was going to be as romantic as it was. Apparently, they came over on a ship from England. And they were coming to America, and he had to stay, like, underground, like, where all the servants stayed.
Ed
and then
did?
She stayed, yes. And then Lorraine was wealthy, and so she stayed, like, on an upper deck. And then, but she was, like, engaged. But then her and Ed ended up falling in love, and then he painted her. He's like, why don't you lay on this couch? And then he, like, painted her. And then...
You're doing Titanic.
What?
I totally fell for this. I
sucker.
Totally... Nope. I was there until the painting. You got me so good. I was literally like, this is a great story. Like, because I wasn't here for the interview.
Yeah. I was like, wow. I don't remember these parts of the story, Carrie.
Start typing in questions.
And you guys are who are listening, I can't even see the notes. So I literally, I was just, I was defenseless. I was like, wow, this is great. Oh, man.
All right. So let's play. We'll play the interview now. There will be a little dream sequence music. Then the interview will start.
No butt stuff sounds.
There will be some floppity butt stuff sounds.
Oh, is there a butt stuff buzzer? Dinger?
Dinger? Yeah, that works. That works. Just an
what's form. This button? Oh,
that's a good
that's,
butt stuff.
That's a good butt stuff button right there. Yeah.
Percussion.
That's a good one.
I like it.
All right. We'll be back in a while.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi, is this Tony?
Yes.
Hi, Tony. This is Carrie Martin and Adam Todd Brown with the podcast in LA called Pretty Scary.
Hi, how are you? I'm sorry about that. I was on another call. I had another interview and I didn't know I had. They called me at 10 of 9.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, and I heard the call coming in, but I couldn't get off the phone with this guy fast enough.
Oh, that's right. Because we were like, I was looking at my email and I was like, did I have the wrong date? I was starting to doubt myself. And I was like, no, I swear, it says tomorrow. It says 9 p.m. Well,
I couldn't remember the name of the person that was calling me. So the person called it 10 of 9, and I thought it was you. But it was a different person. And they're talking to me and they're asking me questions. Because I only thought I had one interview. Apparently, I double booked for the same exact time. That's stupid. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. So I think I kind of described our podcast in the email. And we started out kind of going over things that were pretty scary in Los Angeles in particular, like the Angeles National Forest, the Cecil Hotel. And then we started kind of expanding and talking about different things that were scary in the world. And we had a listener who's a huge fan of Nesper and of, I believe you're the son-in-law of Lorraine and Ed
yeah.
Warren. Okay.
Yeah.
And so she was like, why don't you reach out and, you know, see if you could get an interview. So thank you so much for agreeing to be on.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, my pleasure.
Awesome. So Nesper's been around since 1952. And what exactly does Nesper do?
Okay, well, first of all, it's Nesper and the New England Society for Psychic Research. And it was started in 1952 by Ed and Lorraine Warren. And the reason why it was started was Ed used to live in a haunted house from age 5 to about age 12 in Bridgeport. And he was frightened out of his wits when he lived in this home. And when he turned 17 years old, he joined the Navy, World War II. Mm-hmm. And he said to himself, when I get out of the Navy, I'm going to find out if people had the same kind of phenomena happen to them happened to me in that house. Because he was so frightened when he was a young boy. He'd come home from school like 8 years old, 9 years old. If he came home, say in the dead of winter when it was dark out, and he, because in February when it's dark like 4 o'clock, 4:30
right.
here, he'd look up and see no lights in his house. No lights are on. Nobody's home. He wouldn't go in the house, no matter how cold it was. He would go hide. He would hide under these vegetable carts that the old Italian men had during the summertime where they sold their vegetables, but they left the carts out. So he'd hide under the carts and wait and look up and keep looking up at the house until the lights went on. And when the lights went on, then he knew someone was home and now I can go in. That's how frightened Ed was.
Wow.
So when he was 17, he joined the Navy. So when I get out, I'm going to find out people had similar experiences like me. And he would read all these magazines like Fate Magazine and other ones and learn about hauntings. And when he got out of the Navy, he took Lorraine. First, he joined an art school, and he learned how to paint, like, New England scenes and haunted house scenes was his specialty. He used to paint them on wood, and he used to find these dark pieces of wood, and he'd find barn wood. And finally, he said, I'm going to open a studio up and call it the Barn Door Studios. And he did. But before he did that, he used to paint on barn wood and on porcelain plates, and then go up and sell these things. But what he would also do, he would read these articles in these magazines about these haunted locations, and he would find them. He'd say, I'm going to take Lorraine with me in my 1933 Chevy Eagle sedan that he bought for $15. He bought a 33 Chevy back in like 1949 for like $15, And he told me, he laughed. He said, I had to pay that thing off on time. I go, what do you mean? What do you mean pay it off on time at $15? He's, yeah. He said, I was so broke back then, I had to have to pay $5 a month until I paid it off. So he said, take that car with these paintings with Lorraine and go to these tourist areas and sell them. But what he also did is he would go up and find the haunted house. He'd park in front of the house. He would get his sketch pad out with a white piece of sketch paper and a pencil, and he would sketch the house that he read about and he's parked in front of. And then he would hand the paint, sketch to Lorraine, take about 25 minutes to do it, and he'd say to her, hey, Lorraine, do me a favor. And I remember he's 22, 23 years old, and so was she. Lorraine, do me a favor. Take this sketch, bring it up to the house. Whoever answers the door, tell them that your husband out in the car there loved your house, and he did a nice sketch of it, and he wants you to have the sketch. Maybe that'll get us in the house so I can talk about their haunting. And 99.9% of the time, Lorraine would be looking back from the house and waving Ed on, saying, come on up, Ed, because they want to talk to Ed. And he'd go in the house and he'd, you know, talk about it, the sketch that he made. Then he'd start asking them about the haunting that he read about. He'd say, you know, I read about this haunting in a magazine. Can you tell me a little bit about what's going on? And that's how he would begin to learn about hauntings and haunting phenomena and the different kinds of haunting phenomena. So that's how he started. But one day, 1952 actually was, he's sitting on his floor with his wife, with Lorraine. There's all these case files, all these folders, all these pictures, all these typewritten notes spread out over the floor. And Ed looks at Lorraine, he says, you know, Lorraine, we got to do something about this. We got too much stuff going on. We got to form like a society or something, because this is getting out of control. We have to start organizing. We have to have a society, and we have to have some more structure, have some more investigators. And that's what he did. He created the New England Society for Psychic Research way back then, and it's still in business today.
For some reason, I was thinking the P was for paranormal, but it's psychic. I don't know why I wrote that down wrong. So Ed and Lorraine were childhood sweethearts, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he met her when he was 16, and she was, well, I should say she met him, because she had two girlfriends with her when she was 16 years old, and they said, Lorraine, we're going to go to the movies. And she said, okay. And it was the Colonial Theater in Bridgeport, Connecticut. So she was 16 years old. That was 27, 37, 1942, 43, just before he went to the Navy. And they said, we have a boy that we want you to meet. She was, oh, I don't care about boys. That's what she said. She said to the girls, I don't care about boys. Boys are rough, and you know, they're not nice. I just want to do my schoolwork and just come home and do my schoolwork and not worry about boys. It's, well, I just
that
meet him anyway.
What I was like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like hanging out with boys.
Yeah. Just meet him anyway. They said it, you don't have to go out with them. So Ed was an usher at the movie theater. Usher. And Ed, even when he was 15, 16, was a sharp dresser. He used to wear these really pleated pants, shiny shoes, really spit-polished shoes, and he was really clean-cut, and he was about 140 pounds. So Lorraine goes into the movie theater, and it says, this is Ed. He says, we'd like you to meet Lorraine. And she said, boy, he's a nice-looking man, or boy, he's a nice-looking boy. He's really well-dressed. She was kind of impressed with how his demeanor was. And after the show, Ed said, why don't I walk you girls home? So he's walking home with the three girls. Now, remember that back then in the early 40s, if you didn't go out with a boy, you don't have a boy taking you home and walking you up to your house. Where did you meet this guy? You know, one of those. Mm-hmm. That's like, no, it's not a setup thing. It's not right. So, matter, hold on a second. Matter, dude. Hold on one second. Okay. Matter. Oh, she's laughing. My wife fell or something. She was laughing.
Oh, no.
Right, no, she's okay.
We were scared that a demon was attacking you.
Yeah, I thought it was a haunting.
Yeah. So she is walking home with Ed, with the two girls. Now, the two girls, their stop is first and second, and then Lorraine's the last stop is to drop off Lorraine, so she didn't want Ed to bring her all the way home. So he's like, you know, walking along with him. He's said, why don't we go to a malt shop and get a malt? So they went into the luncheonette.
Did they talk about the big race? That's what my dad used to do. He used to go drag racing, and then they'd go out for malts after and talk about the race.
Yeah. So they went into this place, and the two girls ordered a Coke, Coca-Cola. And Lorraine said, well, I don't like straight Coke. I want an ice cream sundae. I'm sorry, an ice cream soda. Now, back then, Cokes were 5 cents each, and ice cream sodas were 10 cents. So she, Ed had to come up with 10 cents for Lorraine's ice cream soda, right? So she used to joke with him all the time. He used to joke with us all the time. He said, Lorraine, from the day I met you, I always knew you were a gold digger. You had to order a 10-cent Coke. 10
That's cent true. Ice cream soda. She sounds like it.
All the other girls, 5 cents, I had to spend 10 on you. You laughed.
That's good, though. But she was laying down the law, like what she wanted right off the bat. You got to let him know.
Right. So when he ran across the street, because she said, he said, well, I better get home now, because he couldn't walk her home, you know. He had to just go, and the girls would go on their own. And so he ran across the street. And Lorraine said, she said this years later to me and to others, because she's psychic, remember, and she was psychic since the age of 9. She said, I didn't see the young, 140-pound, clean-cut young man running across the street when I was looking at him. I saw Ed as he was in later years, as when I was married to him with gray hair and everything and pudgy. She goes, I had a picture of him in my mind. In fact, when I went home that evening, she said, I wrote in my diary, I am going to marry that boy. And she did. And remember, it's something else because she never dated anyone else before Ed or after Ed.
He was what a good only, girl.
The yeah. only man she ever dated was Ed.
Wow.
So
that's a love story, right?
Yeah. It is a love story. And for I mean, sure. I saw they were close in age and obviously they worked together and then ended up having a family.
Yeah.
They were very close in age because he was born in September of 1926.
She was January,
1926. She was born January 27th, so only a few months difference in their ages. So, yeah, and they were married before he passed in 2006. They were married for 62 and a half years.
Wow.
I mean, that's kind of a lot.
That is. That's a
kind
lot
of
years.
Kind of a lot. Yeah.
Kind especially lot. Today.
Yeah.
If it was 62
sure.
months, I'd still be floored.
Yeah, so. You know, that's a love story and a half because they spent all their time together. Like, you know, when you go to a job and your husband goes to another job, that wasn't the case. They went to the same job.
Right.
Right.
Which was helping people, or if they're selling paintings, they went together. So they were together 24/7 for all those years.
Well, wow. I think in recent years, and I guess the last maybe 10, 15 years, I mean, there has been a lot more with, you know, psychic and paranormal stuff. And so I think it's interesting. I feel like they were trendsetters, like ahead of their time. I would think right. back when they were doing this, what, the 40s, 50s?
Yeah,
it would 50s. Probably be, I don't want to say scoffed at, but maybe.
Right.
Oh, not maybe.
It
they
was.
Were scoffed at.
Yeah.
Yes, they were scoffed at, absolutely. In other words, people would say, even when they started to do lectures in the late 60s, people in the audience, after they gave a two-hour lecture on ghosts and devils and demons and telling people about the warnings and telling people that they're real and they really exist, in the Q&A periods, they would have people raise their hand and go, hey, Ed, you really believe in ghosts? Come on. After all of that talking about ghosts, and he would say, you know, that's the biggest insult you can ever give me, is to say to me something like that. I just spent 2 hours telling you about ghosts and demons and my whole life's work, and you're asking me if I really believe in this stuff.
Right.
So people would heckle him. They would heckle him, and not a lot. I'm not saying it's every single time. But they didn't buy into it as much as they do today. And that's why I call Ed and Lorraine the pioneers of the supernatural realm and the paranormal realm, the preternatural realm, because back then there was only a few people that were remotely involved, people like Harry Price back in the 1800s, and then Hans Holzer was another guy, but that's about it. There weren't like a million people doing it.
Right.
And a lot of people didn't believe in it. A lot of people didn't want to know about it. You know, they tried to sweep it under the rug. People were being haunted, but the general public who weren't being haunted just didn't believe in it because it didn't happen to them.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've never been in a tsunami, but I know they exist. You know, I mean, if the wind is blowing, you know the wind exists. Air is air, right? It's
right.
The fact that it's there. So, but people won't believe things they don't see with their own eyes. Now, that is good in a way. In a way, that's good to be skeptical, to not believe everything you see or hear. Like if I just tell people, you know, the earth is flat, they're just going to believe me. So you tell people, you know, this ghost came to my house and it looked like this. You don't automatically believe the person, because if you automatically believe them, then you're just, you're not an investigator. An investigator has to be shown it, has to be seen it, has to feel it, has to hear it, has to have evidence that there is something there. So, and that's what Ed would do and Lorraine would do. So you have to have a skeptical mind to go in. In other words, you'd go in thinking, there's nothing here. Let's see if there really is. Let's see if these people are making this up, or if they got a vivid imagination, or is it real? So, because the worst thing you can do as an investigator is to walk in and believe everything the person tells you right off the bat.
Right.
Because they could be just making up the whole story for various reasons. Sometimes they just want notoriety. Sometimes they just want to, they're skeptical societies, and they just want to prove Ed and Lorraine or whoever it is wrong so they can go on a blog nowadays
right.
and say, boy, we just fooled the people who claim to be the best at supernatural investigating. We made up this whole story, and they bought it hook, line, and sinker.
So do you do any investigating, Tony?
I do, yeah. I've been doing it for years. I did it with Ed, wow. and I still do it today, yeah. I've been doing it for, you know, over 30 years.
So what is, like, one of your most notable or most memorable cases?
Oh, there's so many. I can't really, right. like, just, I can't mention one, but there's a lot. There's a lot of cases that where people were under oppression. People were under diabolical oppression. In other words, that it's close to possession, but it wasn't actually possession. But close to it, getting on that road to it until we intervened. I had, when I was in England one time with Ed and Lorraine, we went to a place called Whitby Abbey. People can who are listening or are going to listen on the podcast can look it up. Whitby, like W-H-I-T-B-Y, Whitby, in England. And there's a old church there, or I don't know if you call it a church or an abbey. It's a ruins now, but that's where we went, to Whitby Abbey. You can look that up, too. It was built in, like, the 14th century. Mm-hmm. And we went there. It was in May of about 1985, I think it was. Can't remember the exact year we went. That's the first time I really had a really bad experience with a demonic entity. We went about 3 o'clock in the morning. Ed woke us up out of a dead sleep, and he says, hey, we're going to Whitby. I go, what are you talking about, Ed? I'm sleeping. He goes, because we're in a bed and breakfast place. He said, no, we're going to go out. And we're going to go take some pictures and recordings, see what we can find over at Whitby. And we were staying in the town of Whitby. And so Judy and Lorraine and me and Ed went, because it was just the 4 of us on that trip. And we went out there, and it was a dead of night. Now, try to imagine to yourself whipping winds off the North Sea and freezing cold temperatures, because even though it was May, that cold sea air that was coming through and making whistling noises through the ruins of the abbey, it was cold out. I had to wear a coat, and dead of night, black. And so we're out there, and it's like, okay, I'm going to set up my recorder, cassette recorders back then, no digital, just cassette. And I had a 35-millimeter camera that I was setting up on a tripod just to take some pictures, willy-nilly, just take pictures. And Judy and Lorraine were off somewhere. I don't know where the heck they were. And I'm setting up the tripod with a 35-millimeter camera. And Ed was about, I'd say, 35 yards away from me, and he was fiddling with his cassette player. And as I'm setting up this camera on the tripod, I felt something. I didn't know. I just felt like a presence behind me. I turn around, and there's this black mass, and I mean black. They're blacker than the night black. It was dead of night, but this thing, I could see it. It was black, and it was like a whirlwind almost. It felt like a pulsating, to me, cyclone of wind or something. But I knew it was demonic because I felt it. I could feel the evil around it. And when you sense something evil, you'll know it. You cannot explain it. I can't tell you what it was like. Like, you know, if I said it was cold, you would understand what cold is.
Right.
If I said it's hot. But you're not going to understand if I say it was evil. But if you felt the evil, you'd know what it was immediately. And I knew it was evil. It drained my energy to the point where I fell on my knees. I could hardly move. And
wow.
I was able to yell out, though. I was able to yell out, help. I yelled it out a couple times. Help. Help me. Like that. And this thing was still there. It was about 3 or 4 feet from me. And it just felt like it wanted to overpower me or just, mm-hmm. I don't know what it wanted to do, beat me into the ground or something. And Ed, unbeknownst to me, was running towards me at first. I didn't see him. And then I heard him, and he's yelling. Here's exactly, I remember exactly what I was yelling. He's yelling, "In the name of Jesus Christ and the blood of Christ, I command you to leave and go back to where you came from." And he had a vial of holy water in his hand, and he was sprinkling it. He always used to carry a little bottle of holy water with him. He was sprinkling it in the air, and he was running. And for Ed to run at that kind of pace, I was amazed. I look up, and he was right near me. Ed was right near me, and I heard him getting closer and closer with the loudness of his voice. All of a sudden, this black thing just went, and it was gone. Just like as fast as it was there, it was gone. And I could feel the evil go away, but I was still drained. I couldn't get up on my own. Ed had to grab both my arms and help me up. He's like, hey, you okay? You okay? He saw it too. He heard me yell, help, but he saw the mask because I asked him, I said, did you see that freaking thing? He says, yeah, I saw it. He goes, that was demonic. He says, that was demonic, Tone.
So do you?
And I said, why the hell did that thing come to me? Mm-hmm. He goes, it was a warning. It was a warning to you. So because I was getting involved in the work.
Well, that's what I was wondering, is if maybe you and the Warrens, because this is the line of work that you do, because I don't think I've ever seen a demon.
Yeah.
No. Other no. The thing is, here's how I analogize it, Gary. I analogize it this way. Most people never saw a burglary in progress. Most people never saw a robbery in progress. But cops do. Why? Because cops are in that work. Cops are called to those things. So people say, well, how come you see ghosts and I don't? Well, we get called to those houses that have ghosts. Just like a cop would be called to a house that has a break-in, so he sees the break-in or the aftermath, or he sees somebody get beat up because he's called to it. So that's it. If you're involved in it, you're going to see it. Right. And I was getting involved in it, and this was a warning to me. Because the thing is, the demonic realm, devils don't want you to get involved. Devils don't want societies for psychic research. Devils don't want groups to help other human beings because the devil is our enemy. The devil hates human beings, anything that's created in God's image, and that's us. That's a hated image to the demonic realm. They don't want us to help other human beings that are in trouble through demonic entities. So they would like nothing more than to scare me off and me to say, Ed, I'm not going to do any of this stuff with you anymore, okay? They would love that.
Right.
Because they don't want people to help. So they try to dissuade people from helping. So that's almost like a test of my will to see if I'll keep going. And I knew that. Ed explained it all to me, that, you know, that's what's going on. They're trying to get to you so you won't help out. So, yeah, that was one of the worst. That was one of the worst because it was one of the first and it was one of the worst.
So do you carry...
They're not always like the Hollywood hauntings. They're not like that. You know, people keep saying, well, you know, I went to a haunted house and I didn't see anything happening. It's insidious. It's secretive. They're conniving. In other words, when you're in the house, that all phenomena could stop. Why? Because they want you, the investigator, to say, oh, there's nothing here. These people are nuts. They're making it all up. This is. And then when we leave, the thing starts up again and the people are tormented. They don't want us to help. So sometimes, depending on the demon or the devil or the spirit, it'll just stop when you go. You can be in the house for 2 weeks and nothing happens.
So,
and then when you leave, it acts up again.
So, Tony, what do you do when you arrive at a haunting? And do you carry holy water with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I carry holy water, and I carry a blessed crucifix with me. And I carry what's called pontifical incense with me, high church incense, which is blessed. All the objects, the holy water, the crucifix, and the incense is blessed by a Catholic priest, ordained Catholic priest. Because these objects that are blessed are hated by the demonic. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're hated. So in other words, here's what I mean. Here's how I analogize it to people when they say, well, what are you burning the incense for? And what are you sprinkling the holy water on the house for? Here's why. And I always have the people when I leave, I tell them, hey, go get yourself a CD, an audio music CD of Gregorian chants. And this is going to be a teaching experience when I hear this. Get Gregorian chants, which is the reciting of prayers by monks in a rhythmic type of a fashion, almost musical. they're chanting prayers. The demonic hates that. Holy water, incense. Now, let me give you the analogy which I mean. If you went to, you and your boyfriend, your husband, went out to a bar, a lounge, and you or and your husband, neither one of you smoke, neither one of you drink alcohol, would you say that?
Ew.
And neither one of you like rap music. Rap, you hate it. You like country music, you don't like rap. So you go to this bar that somebody suggested you try, and you walk into the bar, right? And everybody in the bar is smoking. They allow smoking in this one particular bar. You hate smoke. You don't smoke. You never did. It's killing you. They're all drinking. They're all drunk. They're falling over one another. You don't drink. You like soda. And they're playing rap music. How long are you and your husband going to stay in the bar? 5 minutes, 2 minutes, and run out? Yes. You're not going to stay because you hate it. Well, the holy water to the demonic is like the alcohol that you hate. The incense is like cigarette smoke to them that you hate because it's blessed incense and they hate it. Anything that's blessed and holy, right? And the music, the Gregorian chanting music, is screeching rap music to their ears. They hate it. How long is a demonic entity going to stay around that house if there's holy water, there's incense burning that's blessed?
If I was a demon, I'd get out of there.
And it's Gregorian chant. They're going to leave or want to leave or not stay long. They don't want to go with these, so they don't like that. They don't like stuff like that. They do like dysfunctionality in humans. They like alcoholism in humans. They like drug
addicts.
Like
the perfect candidate to be.
Yeah. They like anything. They like anybody that's weak because they attack.
A demon buzzer?
They attack the weak. They attack the weak.
That's
why a lot of mentally ill people get attacked and get possessed by a demonic entity. Mentally, they're not strong.
Right.
Or people who don't have a strong faith, they're attacked. Or people who are dysfunctional or just bad people, they're attacked because they figure, well, they're bad people. They're weak. They're not godlike. So let's attack them. We can get them. We can get to them, those people. So that's the key. And when I go to a haunted house, what do? First thing I do is, first of all, I bless myself before I go in with holy water. Second thing I do is I walk in, introduce myself, and then I sit down to people and say, what happened? What, when, how, where, why? And I get dates, I record it of everything that happened. I might talk to the people individually instead of together, because if you talk to the people together, she'll say, oh, you remember, Joe. You remember when I got that banging sound? And he'll just mumble, oh, yeah, right. Maybe it's a different story Joe has to tell me than what she's telling me. So you split them up, more than one investigator. He goes in the room with the one guy, I go in with another guy, just like a cop would, and get the two separate stories, not together, where they could just influence each other. And you try to find out. And then you would, bring in equipment, that might detect, energies and things like that. Get their story and see if it's consistent. And then you would try to take photographs, recordings, video, maybe stay in the house for a long time to see if anything's happening, and try to determine what's going on there. Is it demonic? Is it human? A human spirit that's earthbound? Which is a big difference from demonic. So you could tell normally by how the people are responding to your questions and what's happening to them. If they're just like hearing their name being called, or if they're hearing like a light go on or an off, that may not be demonic. Because a human spirit might be able to do that, might be able to have the name called out, might be able to move something slightly. But when it's something that's really big, like, hey, the refrigerator moved. Hey, it threw me across the room, and it put scratches on me. That's not human.
Right.
Things that happen to that degree, now you're not dealing with a human entity when you get scratches on people, when you get people pushed, when you get knockings, when you get a refrigerator or something heavy being moved, because the human spirit can only move something very small, like a pencil or a pen or a glass. It can't throw you across the room. A human spirit doesn't have that kind of power, but a demonic entity does. So those are the kind of things you have to ask the questions and try to get the answers. And if it's called for, you start out with a blessing of the house by an ordained member of the clergy, usually of the family's faith. Have them do the burning of the incense when you're not there, like for a couple weeks. Have them play chanting music. Have them recite certain prayers. Have them use holy water. All those kind of things to try to dissuade what's ever there from staying there.
So, Tony, I have one last question for you. Yep. I was reading through some of the cases that the Warrens worked on, and obviously some of the famous ones are Annabelle the Doll, which we've talked about before on our podcast, the Amityville Horror. Have you dealt with any evil clothes in the chest?
Evil what?
Clothes in the chest.
Clothes? What do you mean?
So, one of the evil objects that we've talked about before is there was a chest, and when you would put clothes in there and then you would take it out, whoever wore those clothes would die. Have you ever dealt with anything like that?
No. No, I never had that. I never had that brought to my attention at all. Not that it can't happen, though. Anything can be infused with evil. You know, a Bible can be infused with evil if the right incantations and a person is knowledgeable enough to put those incantations on it. So, yeah, objects can be infused with evil. Objects cannot be possessed by humans, of course. So the doll, the Annabelle doll, can never be possessed by a human spirit, but it could be by a demonic spirit.
Right.
Demonic spirits have the wisdom of the ages, remember. Demonic spirits have much more knowledge than human beings do and much more power than we do. But also, to let you know, they don't have all the power. Who has all the power? Not me, but God does.
Right.
So God is all powerful. God has the power. God has already defeated the devil and demons. They're already a defeated foe. But that doesn't mean that they can't come around and bully us and cause havoc and cause conflict and cause dysfunction and misery to human beings. They could.
And right.
They could drive people to do things like murder people, murder other humans. Commit suicides, they can influence your mind. So even though they're a defeated foe, if we don't use God as our defense, if we don't pray to God and pray to the Almighty for protection, we are not protected because we have a choice in life. We have free will. So when God created us, he didn't just say, you know, there's a blanket protection. You have to believe in him. And you have to pray to him and live a godlike life. So, you know, you have a choice how to live. That's why there's heaven and hell. You have a choice to be a good person or to be a jerk.
Well,
you have a choice to pray to him or to pray to the devil or to not care about God. And then that's when the devil tries to come after you.
One of the worst hauntings that I've heard about was the Totino's family in West Virginia.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
What Hello? Was it about?
Well, a family was murdered, and I guess kind of like the Amityville Horror, I would just wonder, they were heir to like a Italian or a pizza roll fortune, something like that. But I guess I would think if I bought that house, would it still be inhabited by like evil spirits?
Not necessarily. There's haunted houses, and there's haunted people, too. In other words, a demonic, like I said to you, a demonic entity goes for the weak link, goes for the weak person. So you might move into a house and get haunted by this demonic entity. Somebody else can move in. The entity is not coming after you because you got that shield of armor,
right,
which is called strength, called faith in God. All depends on the person's aura and the person's strengths or weaknesses.
Well, I just know that Adam and I are weak, so I think we would be goners.
It's like this, Carrie. You're walking down the street. No, you're Mike Tyson, and you're walking down the street. And then there's an old lady walking down the street. She's kind of crippled over. She's about 90 years old with a purse. And Mike Tyson's swinging his purse. A thug comes out of the bushes. Who's he going to grab, Mike Tyson or the old lady? He's going to grab the old lady,
right,
the weak one. So, you see, it's different. So he wouldn't attack Mike, but he attacks the old lady because she's weak.
Yeah.
So demonic will attack weak, not just physically weak, weak-willed, weak mind, weak faith.
And all of that makes complete sense. Tony, you have been awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure.
I also noticed, Tony, so the museum, the occult museum, it says it's closed for, I guess there was zoning regulations, so you guys are trying to find a new location. If anybody wanted to, I mean, do you guys take donations or is there anything, I don't know if we could like spread the word to help, but.
Spread the word that we're looking for a new place. And, you know, we're going to, you know, if anybody has any recommendations, but it's got to be in Connecticut. I can't go far away from Connecticut with it. because I live in Connecticut and I'll be going to the museum a lot.
Right.
But it's got to be somewhere in Connecticut. So if anybody has any ideas, just email me, you know?
Absolutely. And that's nespr2@yahoo.com.
That's correct.
That Perfect. Correct. Well, thank you so much, Tony. You have a great evening. We really appreciate you being on.
Great talking to you.
Thanks, Tony. Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
That was good. Okay.
That's such a good interview. I'm so you guys, I'm so bummed I wasn't here for that.
Tell us what you learned.
What was your favorite part, Caitlin?
My favorite part is when Carrie asks about haunted clothes in the chest. Clearly, that's my favorite part. Carrie's my favorite part of a lot of things about my life.
That was pretty great.
Oh, my God. I was in the other room, and I thought I was going to shit my pants.
And the Totino's.
I've never heard of that.
The Totino's haunting.
What was that about? Why didn't the Totino's call me?
Here, by the way, just so you guys know how neurotic I am, I'm in the other room thinking like, man, I really hope we don't blow this connection.
I mean, we might have.
I hope not. I mean, we were joking, sir, but...
Well, on the bright side, this is a subscription episode, so he's not going to hear
it. Yeah, that's what I was thinking,
thank God.
Yeah, we'll put like a clip out that makes him sound really great.
Cool glass of lemonade you just handed me. I was like, man, we really need to. You guys, the interview ended. They come out. We're like joking about it. And then I look at them deadpan. I'm like, yeah, but that's a good connection for us. We can use this guy. It's the saddest thing, but it's totally true.
Wait till you hear the outtakes.
And Carrie were like, oh, we should go redo that interview then.
Fuck.
Probably.
God damn it.
Well, the outtakes, when we couldn't get him on the phone, I was like, answer the other line, bitch.
You're just yelling at him?
Yeah.
And now we just said that on this podcast.
We don't need an outtake. Let's just recreate the whole 25 minutes.
Oh, geez.
Pretty great stuff.
Yeah. You guys are the best.
I'm like sweating.
Wait, so are we one step closer to a ghost hunting situation?
Well, they don't have a museum. And so that's the thing is we need to try to help Tony find a Connecticut museum.
Yeah. We finally have a Save the Rec Center thing to do.
We do.
Okay, we have to save this haunted museum.
We have to find a spot in Connecticut.
In Connecticut, guys. Do we have any freelance side hustle or full-on realtor friends in Connecticut? Listen to the podcast.
Jess McDonald is from Connecticut, so she,
there's a start.
She probably knows people. Maybe we can.
I mean,
we're
how big
make
is
this
Connecticut?
Like, I don't.
It's like 4 miles.
Yeah,
long.
Right.
It's not big.
Okay, good. Because he didn't. He just said Connecticut. He didn't specify a city.
No, it's fine. We'll figure it out.
And if there's a city called Connecticut in another state,
then
sorry, bub.
Yep.
Yeah. Like,
we got you on tape saying what your requirements were. Right. So, how about you?
I did just
hand that memorabilia over.
I got a letter from it was something like Alabama, Ohio, or something at work, and I was like,
"Why'd
you do this? Like, why would you do?" I mean, Paris, Texas is annoying enough. That's, you know.
Well, I actually, outside of Chillicothe, I was born in I grew up in a very small town called Rome. And so people would be like, where are you from? And I'd be like, Rome. And they're like,
this will be a real cool story.
You don't have an Italian accent.
It's not what you think, actually. Yeah. It's actually just Rome.
Illinois.
Why do people name cities like things like that? It stresses me out. Because
I don't like it.
Where are these planning committees like formed? Because, you know, several people had to okay that.
Yeah.
It's not just one person that's like, oh, let's call the town Rome. It's like a panel of older people that are like, yes.
I do like when streets are like named after like trees or jewels.
Yeah.
Or presidents.
Presidents are good.
Or I think that's fun because I'm like, who am I going to like stumble upon next?
So this was fun. We should wrap this up.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have to record with Vanessa. She's here.
Oh, well,
she's awesome.
Yeah.
Have to? No. Get to. It's going to be a fun episode, too. We're going to cover Elisa Lam and Sharon Tate.
Mm-hmm.
Should be good times. Do you have anything to plug before we get out of here?
I'm on a stand-up show.
August 23rd.
Okay. All right. It is airing before. Yeah. Because we're like at the beginning of August. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm still.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
I've lost it.
August 23rd, the first Unpop stand-up show.
And my last show before I have a baby.
Caitlin's
so come
last
to this
show before she has a baby.
Fun.
I think we're going to live stream it for some subscribers. We're not going to make it like a public thing.
Wow.
But
okay.
I think we're going to live stream it.
Oh, shit. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We live streamed the backyard show.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at Bossy Matilda. You can also find Carrie and I on Twitter because we have a Twitter handle for our podcast at White Wine True Crime. You can hear all the White Wine True Crime news. Also, Carrie and I have a podcast. Mm-hmm. It's called White Wine True Crime.
Really?
Yeah. Did you know that?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay. Let me fill you in. It's really great. It's one of the best podcasts in the history of the world. And, sure.
There's only like 20 good podcasts. So.
Well, there's only like, and then there's only like 100 podcasts. I don't know if you know that.
Right,
there's not many podcasts, especially comedy podcasts.
No.
Last of the Mohicans here.
Yeah.
Not a lot. But ours is really great, and you should listen to it. We watch true crime TV and documentaries, and we talk about it and pick on people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a nutshell.
Good times. And, yeah, you know, just follow us on the socials at OnPops on Twitter, OnPops.podcast on Instagram. Subscribe to our YouTube page. We're going to be doing a lot more YouTube stuff in the next coming few months. That I don't know why I said that way.
You know what, though? But people knew they were with you.
Yeah, they got it.
It's fine.
YouTube.com/OnPops. Go there. And I think that's it. Let's get the fuck out of here.
You got to ask me what I'm going to plug.
Carrie, what do you want to plug?
Oh, Carrie.
My butthole.
I knew it. Oh. The second thing I've fallen
for
in this
us.
Recording.
Damn it.
Really makes me mad.
Carrie, say
goodbye.
I can't
goodbye. Believe she got goodbye. Me with the Titanic joke.
I could feel you out of my peripheral, and you seemed like you were like into the what I was saying.
I was
so
completely
I was sure
swept
that I was
away.
You, and I didn't want to look at you because I thought you'd like give me a look like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I just stared at the.
I was just like, did I not pay attention when he was talking about this?
Yeah, no.
I was just pissed I hadn't heard this
I didn't,
part
but
before.
Also.
But this makes more sense. Yeah. It's not true. So that's why I hadn't heard it yet. Fake news.
Fake news.
Boo.
Caitlin, say goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.